Weekly, brought to you by Barfoot and Thompson.
Welcome along to Property Matters for another Monday, and I'm absolutely delighted this week to step outside a little bit of the sort of investment space and talk to Annie. Well, I'll be curious whether he calls himself a life coach, a business coach, a property coach, a divorce coach, all of the above, and that's Spencer Matthews. Welcome to Property Matters.
Kia ora, Stephen. Thank you. At the moment, I'm calling myself a divorce and separation coach.
Okay.
But it's probably the easiest thing to do.
Yeah. Nice. Well, look, you know, we'll dive into that whole side very shortly. But look, take us back, because you've had a very varied career journey. So fill us in. Tell our listeners about all those different moments in your career that's led up to today.
Thank you so much. Well, I suppose it goes back to finishing secondary school at a sort of a time in my life when I sort of looked around and went, what do I do now? So like a lot of New Zealanders, we were fortunate back in the day to have a cheaper university education. So I trundled off to Auckland University, got myself a master's in geography, and found that I really enjoyed the variety and the curiosity and the learning that that offered. But equally, I didn't really enjoy the research. So that's when I went, okay, what do I want to do with that? So I kicked that particular thing down the road for about 5 years and went traveling the world.
No.
I was mainly a ski bum for a while in the US. Had a wonderful time there, really enjoyed it. And also discovered that I really enjoyed interacting with people. So after that time, when I decided to write, it's time to come back to reality and rejoin New Zealand, I thought, what do I want to do? What sort of career offers me the variety that I need? And I sort of looked around and realized policing was it. So came back, joined police, aced the physical. Well, I failed the physical the first time around. Because my technique wasn't quite right, but aced the physical because I was so skinny. I was after traveling through Southeast Asia, I was so thin, but I just rocketed around the running course and, I've grown ever since. Anyway, that's another story. So 28 years in police, and police really enabled me to do that variety I spoke about. It was great to be able to effectively change jobs, develop new skill sets without actually leaving an organization and everything that goes along with it. And towards the end of my career, I always knew I'd be out-ish round about sort of 55 sort of time. That was always my plan. COVID came along, like a lot of things, and affected there. But I was very fortunate that I had a boss at the time, and I said to him, look, I'm going. Yeah, and he said, yeah, great. He was very, but I said, I've got a couple of things that I want to do before I go. And so I was able to do those, tick those boxes, and leave to explore a career in mediation, arbitration, assisting people that I built up arising out of my time as a crisis negotiator and police. So I did that for 18 years. I ended up being the head of the crisis negotiation team. Did some wonderful things, did some counterterrorism stuff, for fairly high level things. And so I went, what do I do now? So left police. They called me up 5 weeks later and said, can you come back? Because we need you.
Okay.
We need your particular set of skills, as Liam Neeson says. So I went back after 9 months. I said, guys, this is it. I left for a reason. So I went off and did a walking pilgrimage in Japan, and then really realized that what I wanted to do was the divorce and separation coaching primarily. And you'll pick up that variety is a big part of me. So also I do a whole lot of other little things on the side, but I really see myself as a divorce and separation coach.
Okay. Well, we'll unpack all of that over the next little while. But if we go back to your time at the police, what were some moments that you look back on that really stood out, either, I guess, as challenges or perhaps highlights?
Yeah, I've got a couple of highlights that I'm really proud of. There's an operational one and a personal one. The operational stuff was dealing with things that happened, and I reflect back, there was a robbery gone bad at a fast food restaurant, a fast food place down in Māori that I attended as the incident commander. And, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, there's not too many opportunities to find a friend to say help. And it was a hostage situation where they were threatening to kill people if we didn't go away. And you suddenly feel everyone looking towards you, like all the police staff looked towards me to make the decision.
Right.
That was my job. And we resolved that situation. No one got hurt. Yeah. Everyone ate, and we resolved it very quickly. Didn't feel good to me, but on hindsight, yeah, it wasn't a huge standoff. But, you know, we had guys with guns holding people inside a building. And at the end of that, the staff came up to me and said, "We were really glad you were here."
Nice.
And that wasn't the first time that happened. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of other incidents where staff completely off their own volition came up to me afterwards and said, "Thank you so much. We really appreciated you were here. We knew it could have gone bad if, you know, someone else was around." And when I sort of started saying to people I was going to retire, it was amazing. Quite a senior member of police came up to me and said, "When I was just out of police college, you came to a job that I was at, an incident that I was at, and you just made such a difference." And I look, he blinked then and go, "I haven't a clue. That was 20 odd years ago." And I would have been acting like I was, but it made such an impact on him that over 20 years later, he still wore his mom. And that made me feel really good. I'm tearing up about it because this was sad for us to know. And so those were the highlights.
Yeah.
For me, that's what it was all about, helping people, guiding them, being there for them. The challenge for me was not going, you know, hire police. But then upon reflection, I've realised that I probably would have been unhappy if I'd gone higher. It just wasn't for me. And for whatever reason, that was recognised. And I've realised my skill set was perfect for where I ended up for the last 15 or so years of my career.
Right. When you think of all the conflict resolution side of your role over the years, what top tips do you have for someone who's trying to calm a tough situation when someone else is obviously angry and in your face?
Yeah. What I learned and what I told the new constables, because that was one of my roles, was first calm yourself. You're no good to anyone if you're wound up, if you're upset, if you're reactive. So first thing is to look in yourself. The second one is to assess your own personal safety, to have a look around, to, if you have to, step back. If it's too dangerous for you, get out of there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So those are the two crucial things. Those are proactive steps that you need to take yourself before you even engage with the person. And if you need to engage, if you want to engage with the person, ask. Yeah. Ask. What's going on? How can I be of assistance? Yeah. What can you tell me more? All those sort of things. And not just ask, but listen. Show that you are listening. Feedback what they're saying. If they say something, just repeat it back to them.
Yeah.
You're not agreeing with them. You're just showing that you're listening. Because eventually, if you are calm, because of the way humans are wired, the other person should calm down. If they don't, then my experience was there's usually something else going on. They're affected by drugs, either alcohol.
Yeah.
There's something going on inside them that you can't fix. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be beyond your capabilities. That's when you sort of reassess and you think, no, time to go.
And if I flip that coin.
One final thing is people really don't like having their issues solved before they're ready.
Yes.
And probably that's up in your space, because you'll get a property manager come in and they'll be venting and they'll say, "Okay, we can do this, this and this." And the person doesn't actually necessarily want these. Yeah. They just want a vent, and it might actually be something else. At the end of it, you say, well, what do you need to be, what can we do to solve this? Mm. It's not about getting in your fridge. It was actually about something completely different. Yeah. But if the person tries to solve the problem before the other person's ready, you're not going to get anywhere.
That's good. If I flip the coin on that, if you know, you're an angry person, either naturally or something's really riled you up, and you're about to go into a situation when you know you are going to be the angry one and the person in front of you may initially be calm, you know, what sort of things should we be thinking about before we enter? Is it exactly the same? Is it about trying to pull back and get calm before entering that space? Is it right now, or should I be coming back tomorrow after I've had some sleep and just a little less angst about it? If we know we're someone that's going to sort of hit that dial up really quickly?
Yes, a little bit. What I also, the flip side is you can be too calm, and it's finding that barrier there. I find that even now, sometimes I feel myself getting angering and frustrated, and that can be useful when you're dealing with, you know, someone at a call center. But you always got to be polite. You know, you always got to be respectful, because it might be out of their control. So it's never undirected anger. Right, you know, righteous anger can be a powerful thing. It's what gets us going. But when you let the anger take over, that's when it becomes problematic. So you can be angry. Probably another way of thinking about it, passionate. You can be passionate about something, you know. And if you know you're that way, as you say, do the self-check, but identify what you want before going into that situation, you know. If you are, you know, if you're going in and you do want to be a little bit direct, you know, I was working one of my other roles yesterday and was rather direct with someone. Sometimes there are occasions when you need to be direct and pointed with someone, but be respectful.
Yeah.
Some people appreciate being told directly what the issue is, but then back away.
Yeah.
You've said your piece, don't hammer it, you've done it, and then how do I... I'm a visual person, so I envisage it to, you know, an arcade pinball game. Don't be the pinball bouncing around the pinball machine.
Yeah.
Directing focused.
And I think respecting that, sometimes your complaint is not actually against the person. It might be something that's happened within their job, etc. So acknowledging that, I respect that you have a job to do. This is not personal, but hear me out. These are my issues and my concerns. I love someone that can separate that. I mean, I've watched in property management, I've seen some people leave a major tribunal situation where we've evicted somebody, and I've watched that person evicted hug the property manager at the end and say thank you. And that's because the property manager treated them with total respect and dignity and went, this is not me personally, but unfortunately, your circumstances have meant that you can no longer be in this house. And that's what this discussion's about. And I love seeing those moments. Look, you mentioned your travel at the beginning and your love of the ocean. And in fact, commercially qualified skipper. Do you find the sea a calming place that's helped you deal with tough elements of your job?
Yes, I do. Yeah, it's great to get out. And what I love about sailing and being on the water is just the simplicity. You, when you're moving, it's just you on the boat. You're going hopefully to a destination, but even when I was crossing the ocean, you're just moving and your world shrinks down. And,
yeah.
I've been reflecting on that a little bit over the past little while. And also, on my walking pilgrimage, the one I did in Japan by myself and then the one I did last year in Spain with my partner, the wonderful Deb, it's that simplicity. It's that having an idea of where you're going, what you're doing, and just being focused on that and not letting the rest of the world come in. And I think that's really what I like about being on the water, walking, That's what attracts me.
We all need to find that place. Yeah. Look, if I look at your career today, and there's several sides of the coaching and mediation you do, but a strong part, as you said, is around separation and divorce. Mm-hmm. What is it about this that interested you so much to turn it into a career? Because we could say it's a bit of a depressing subject at times.
It is.
Although I imagine your crisis negotiation comes into play.
It is. It's tough when you're talking with someone and they're tearing up.
Yeah.
Because it's bringing up emotions. What's really wonderful to me, and it's the same thing with the crisis negotiation, is the end of it. Yeah. I had a client, I won't go into too much details on it, but we had a session last week and he was saying to me, I really appreciate the work that we have done together.
No.
He's looking back on how he was when we started 4.5 months ago, and he's realizing the emotional journey that has been on. He's suddenly got clarity. Those emotions are still there.
Mm.
He was in a relationship with someone that he loved, and now they're picking it apart. But he's able to step back and actually look at it from a clear vision, clear-eyed, and know the path forward.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. It's just like, oh, yeah, that's what I love.
Yeah.
And at the end of, you know, when I was doing my crisis negotiation, you know, people who had done some really bad stuff, you know, at the end of it, things were resolved without further violence.
Yeah.
There might have been violence at the start, but through my intervention there was the violence, because, you know, people might say, oh yeah, just shoot the guy. Well, that's easy for someone to say, but when you're like I have, you, when you're pointing a firearm at another person and you're seriously contemplating pulling the trigger on them, that's a huge emotional toll on what's involved.
Absolutely.
And the last thing I ever wanted to do was take someone else's life. And so if everyone goes home, like I mentioned, that restaurant siege at the beginning, yeah, everyone went home. It was resolved without further stress to anyone.
Yeah.
How could you not want that?
Exactly. So talk me through, you know, what does mediation or coaching look like in the divorce and separation space? What's your role in this between the two parties?
There's two separate roles. So I'll talk about the divorce and separation coaching stuff that I do, and that's assisting my clients to gain clarity about what they want. It's assisting them to regulate their emotions. It's helping them figure out a plan for the future. And it's all driven by them. I don't tell them what to do. I just explore with them the options. Mediation, and you will have encountered, probably, I don't know whether there's a mediation aspect within the property management space.
Oh, we're counsellors, we're social workers.
Yeah. But when I mediate, I'm a independent third party. So my job is to bring the two parties together and let them sort it out, sort of kind of like a referee or you know, someone in that space. But also I'm coaching, I'm encouraging the parties to come to a resolution together. So it is a little bit of an over. It's the same basic skill set as what I do in my coaching thing. But the main thing to remember is a mediator is a completely independent person to the parties involved. They may ask some challenging questions, but if you're involved in a mediation, just because you're being asked a challenging question by the mediator doesn't mean they're suddenly against you.
Yeah.
They're wanting to make you think. Yeah. I do exactly the same thing with some of my clients. I say to them, look, yeah, I might ask you a difficult question. Doesn't mean that I don't believe your version of events or I'm unsupportive. I just want to know that you have thought about it to move forward, this potential path that you're going down. Yeah.
And when someone's going through something like a separation, is it possible to leave the emotions at the door and focus on the road ahead, like sorting the assets, et cetera, or is that a dream? Like everyone's emotions just kick in once they start talking through it.
I would think that if someone said they leave their emotions at the door, then they're probably not human.
Right, yeah.
Emotions are always there.
Yeah.
And actually, I want them to be there because emotions are what drive us.
Mm.
One of my fundamental beliefs is that we're either attracted to something or pushed away from something.
Mm.
Yeah. That's our primary, it's the way we're sort of wired. So I want my clients to feel their emotions, to recognize their emotions, but to not react to their emotions.
Yeah.
So it's okay to feel sad. It's okay to still feel as if you love the other person. It's okay to have this bubbly stuff running around, but don't let those emotions affect your decisions around how you're going to deal with property, because property doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
The house isn't going to love you. You might love the house, but the house ain't going to love you back. So think about that as dispassionately as you can, and try and separate out the emotions. But it's okay. Yeah, I don't think that, I don't think that trying to push down emotions works, because they bubble up eventually, and all you're going to do is in 5 years' time, you'll have this thing come up. And again, I saw that in police, where you try and push down emotions, they come out, they bubble out. Yeah, you've got to recognize it. Yeah.
So you've just written a book, Tides of Change, which focuses specifically on the topic of separation and divorce in New Zealand. Did you feel there was a need for a New Zealand-specific focus? I mean, I imagine in this world of Ask Google or ChatGPT, people will jump online for advice and, dare I say it, perhaps get quite a generic or American response. Did you feel that you needed to sort of Kiwi-fy this experience?
Oh, definitely. And this book came about for a couple of reasons. One, I started thinking, is there a book that I can recommend to my clients to actually read? And I started doing research. And I don't want to sound critical, but I am going to be a little bit critical. There is so much in this space that I work in out there where the author or the person giving advice will start on the lines of, I had a really bad breakup, so I'm going to give you advice.
Yeah, yeah.
And I cringe a little bit at that because I think about, well, you wouldn't expect that of a property manager, would you? You wouldn't say the property manager comes in and the first thing out of their mouth is, yeah, I've had 10 properties and they've all gone horribly wrong, but I'm going to help you put your one out. Yeah, if you heard that from a client, they go, ooh. I've heard that from Rob. The client will go, ooh, same thing with the lawyers. They started from that. Yeah. So there's a bit of a genre. And I thought, oh, I don't really want to recommend any of those books. So I just started looking around and I couldn't find one.
Mm.
I could not find a book. So practical me said, well, let's write one. And so I started down that path. And I wanted to make it specifically New Zealand because there's nothing wrong with trashy TV. I mean, I love if you're on Disney, you've got Kim Kardashian's latest one, but All's Fair. But the first episode of that, I was sitting there watching it with Evan. I was just going, oh, what on earth? They can't do that. And I think that anyone in New Zealand watching that would go along to the lawyer and say, you know, lawyer, I want you to do what
yeah,
and did on TV, and the lawyer's going to go, no, that's not only is it unethical, it's illegal. And so you've then wasted half an hour of the lawyer's time trying to explain why that is so wrong. So that's what the point of the whole book. And you'll see it's thin. Mm-hmm. It was my other goal. I wanted to keep it less than 100 pages, 99 pages, and something that people could read in an hour. And it's not a comprehensive, you know, I've got some guides on criminal law there that are about that thick. But I wanted people to be able to pick it up, read through it, discount the bits that don't apply to them. You know, if you don't have children, you don't really need to go into too much depth about the children part. If you don't have a huge amount of property, you don't really need to talk about property separation, but people may be curious about alternative ways of resolving disputes because, again, all they see is combative, argumentative people going to court. And most people don't realize 95% of separations in New Zealand never see the inside of a court.
Mm, mm.
It's really a small percentage that do. So why do we set up a system? Why do we have this perception that that's the way that you resolve disputes?
Yeah.
Most disputes are resolved through negotiation, mediation, people coming together and saying, we want what's best for our children, what's best for us.
So we have that perception because we've grown up watching way too many L.A. Laws and Ally McBeal, all of those sort of things on TV. Look, if unpack some of the content in your book, a few key areas. Can you share a tip or insight into the space? So the legal framework, you've just said we don't need a manager. To manage all of that. What point would you say this is a case that you do need a lawyer? Like, when should we engage?
The law is fairly clear in that, and I have to caveat, this is not legal advice, but I can talk about generic stuff, which is what I do in the book. The law says that if you have property to split up, and a lot of people, and I have to acknowledge this, a lot of people go into a separation who are not married, then that's well over 50% of the couples in New Zealand. A lot of them choose just to split up the property themselves and never engage with anyone. But if you are going through a divorce, or if you have significant property, the law says that you have to go and see a lawyer at some stage in the process at the end to get final sign off. And that's only fair because the lawyer's going to look at it and go, okay, well, fine. If you've agreed on 50-50, no problem at all. If you've accepted a smaller payout, they're going to ask, why are you accepting 40%? And you can say, well, you know, that's going to be more valuable on the long term, so I'm going to keep this, whatever. They're going to have that discussion so they can sign it up. So you do need a lawyer if there's significant property. The other times you'll probably need a lawyer is if there's a trust involved. And unfortunately, I'm seeing quite a few of my clients. They've got family trusts and the house is in a trust. And to unwind a trust is problematic, you know. And I often say to them, yeah, why did you put your stuff into a trust? And they can't come up with a valid reason. So that's, you're going to need a lawyer. You're going to need a lawyer if there is conflict over the children. Or particularly if the children, that's inter-country stuff.
Right, yeah.
Oh, you need to be very, you probably need a court order to make sure that the children's country of residence is identified and all that sort of stuff. So there are times when you will need a lawyer, but the thing that I say is use your lawyer efficiently.
Yeah. Do the pre-work, everything you can together first and use it for signing off or the disputes.
Yeah. Narrow down what you're already to deal with. Go in there and say, okay, we've dealt with all this property stuff. We've dealt with this. We have this dispute that we cannot agree on.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to go to court. Yeah. The other time that you may end up going to court is if one party is unwilling. Mm. So,
yeah.
And I say court as well because all divorces need to go to court at some stage because you need a judge. Well, you need a, normally it's a judge or a registrar to sign off to say, congratulations, you are now divorced or your marriage is dissolved. But people also don't realize that dissolution is separate from the property stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they conflate the two. Oh, I have to go to court to get my marriage dissolved. All that does is that you marry again.
Yeah.
That's literally all it is.
Yeah.
The property stuff, you can still, well, I was talking to one of my colleagues and they said they've had a couple that has only just now resolved their property dispute that started in 2007.
Wow.
At which point my eyebrows raised and I went, really? They need someone like me?
Yeah.
Stuff like that can happen. So, you do need a lawyer, potentially.
You mentioned children, you know, and children often get caught up in all of this. What's sort of some of your quick tips around dealing with children through this journey?
Dealing with children, don't triangulate. Don't fight your battle through your children. Yeah. If you're going to have a battle, fine. Battle it out between the two of you, but don't use your children. And also, don't use them as bargaining chips. Mm. Say, you need to give me more money or else I'll make custody an issue. You know, that's horrible because what message is that sending to the children? Mm. Well, I say to my clients, don't think of yourself as co-parents, even though you are. Think of yourself as co-business owners.
Mm.
Your new business is raising your children.
Yeah.
And do everything you can to raise the best possible children that you can.
Yeah, nice. Well, my wife and I separated a long, long time ago, and we actually went and saw a child psychologist and said, tell us, what's the best, because we left quite amicably, what is the best thing for these young kids? And he gave us great advice. He said, do week about if you can. Mm-hmm. Always swap on a Sunday morning or lunchtime, because you've got the afternoon to let the kids reset to mum or dad's rules, place. Things are a little different. Mm-hmm. You have a nice family meal Sunday night. You do all the school stuff, etc., during the week. Have a cool day with them Saturday, and then they swap. And always where you can, go and pick your kids up. Don't meet in car parks or after school or whatever. Show that mum and dad can meet, swap over, have a conversation. So we really ingrained that. We would come in, have a cup of tea at each other's house on a Sunday. The kids would see us having a catch up, then we'd pack up. And I could not recommend it, because we started off trialing lots of different things, and once we switched to that, it was perfect. Now, that won't work for everyone. It depends why you split. But just getting that child expert was really useful for us to go, okay, we've heard it from the top person, let's try it out. So, you know, it's a bit like everything in life, get the experts involved at different times. When it comes to property, what is the law in this space around dividing assets, and what's your advice?
The basic law, the underlying principle, is a 50-50 split. Now, like everything, there are exceptions. And the real challenge is if you're bringing in property into the marriage or into the relationship. Whether marriage or once you're together for 3 years, then it's assumed it's going to be 50-50 split. So one of the things I cover off in the book is seriously consider having a contracting out prenup. A contracting out agreement, because then that makes it clear whose property is whom. And that's the biggest problem. The parents of one party might go, they're not getting the family house that I gave to the partner. And that's where the arguments arrive. So property, it's assumed to be 50-50, but there's a huge infinite number of variations. KiwiSaver is a big consideration at the moment.
Right.
How you deal with that, that's one time that you might have to go to court, because a judge can order a KiwiSaver to be opened up and shared. Right. That's pretty much the only way you can get that done. So offsetting KiwiSaver against, say, the return from a house. But then the person might be, you know, they might have a huge amount in the KiwiSaver, but they can't access it until they're 65. So all these things need to be worked through during negotiation. You know, it's life is a negotiation. So it's balancing it out. And I cover that off in the book. What are you prepared to give up now in return for something else in the future?
Mm. Nice. What I really loved in your book was it wasn't just around dealing with the divorce and separation now. It was looking at the approaches of how to deal with life after separation. I'm running a bit short of time, so I'm thinking we chat about, you know, the finances, but also you have some great blog sites up on your website, which I thoroughly enjoyed reading through, you know, and you talk about just simple things like A, finances, but B, you know, getting back on the dating scene, finding your voice post-separation. I've only got a couple of minutes, but what are your top tips in that space?
Top tips? Well, I'm going to speak out to the men here, because there is a gender difference, and I've led that straight away. Men I have observed tend to rush straight into another relationship. They don't take the time to really think about what went wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, noted word, I know, but actually to reflect on the past relationship and to recognize their role in it and to maybe improve on the next one. No, they tend to sort of, I'd be rather crass, hop out of one bed and into another for a whole range of reasons, and I'm sure you weep them out. So I'd say if you're moving on, stop and think and don't rush into a relationship. Work out what you need and what you want and what's best for you, because you may have changed. You know, I've been through divorce twice. I don't make a big thing of it, but at the end of each one of those, I had a significant time of reflection and where I sort of thought about what happened. For women, again, think about what you want. I've noticed with my female clients and speak to people, there's not that desire to repartner up as quickly. And there's also significant fear out there. There's that fear of rejection. There's that fear of what if. And we're seeing that now with grey divorce becoming more popular. And that's a whole interesting topic where the number of older women initiating divorce and separation is growing because they've got the financial backing to it, but they're scared of getting out there because of body images and what society does to women. Again, a whole another story out there. Whereas men, it's like, oh, I'll just go out there and start dating. But they haven't sold themselves. So I say, stop, reflect, think about the future, and think about what you actually want.
Yeah. Nice. Now, when you're not doing separations and divorce coaching, you've got lots of other feathers to your bow. One that caught my eye was the advanced care planning. And talk to me about some of the other coaching that you offer.
Well, that's something that I'm really passionate about, and I help out at a local retirement village with this. So many people that I speak to, and I've been thankful with my own family, we've discussed this, but then speaking with some other families, they don't talk about what happens when the parents get old. And the parents might end up sitting in a house that's too big for them. The maintenance is going down, it's too expensive, but they say, I want to keep it for the children. And the children are saying, oh, I don't want to live in that house. You go, well, yeah. But because they've never had those conversations, they never actually worked out, when mum and dad or, dad and stepmum and mum and dad or whatever, what's the next phase in their life? Or sit down and actually say, how do you want to end your life? How do you want your death to be? People are afraid of talking about death, and they don't confront it. They don't acknowledge that it's coming. And then all of a sudden, something happens, because when people get older, stuff happens in a hurry. And all of a sudden, dad, in my case, is looking at having to go into high level gear. And there's a whole lot of steps you have to go through. You can't just wave and it happens. So have those discussions, but families don't have the techniques and the abilities to do it. So that's what I do. I bring everyone together and gently encourage people to share their fears, share their desires, share what they want to have happen. And at the end of it, just do things like create an enduring power of attorney. Actually write down what you want your funeral to be. So many arguments I've seen about funeral arrangements because no one ever spoke about it.
I have
just as I said,
both my parents have given us folders of what they'd like their funeral. And they both joke because mum's is really thin and she says dad's is a full-on requiem. It's right every song. And mum's like, I don't care. You can sort those bits, but this is the bit I care about. Spencer, I feel like we could talk for hours. We're going to have you back for round two because we're nearly out of time. Where can people get in touch? I loved all your blogs and things. How can they find you, follow you, and ultimately get your book, Tides of Change?
The easiest way is probably through my website, smadvisory.net. You can Google me. Just be aware that there's another Spencer Matthews out there who's married into the Middletons, who's a bit of a celebrity.
Look for the yellow glasses.
Yes, I'm not the guy who climbed Everest. Been there, but didn't climb it. So smadvisory.net, Google me. It's also, you can type me into the AI bots and look for Male Divorce Coach Auckland and I'll come up, so I'm there. The links for the books, all the blogs, they're all there. It's the easiest way to do it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom and your knowledge. Like I say, I feel like we've just scratched the surface, so we might see you again a little later in the season and talk about a few other things.
I would love that so much, Stephen. You've been a wonderful host. Really appreciate the time to come on and share with everyone.
Fantastic. And listeners, if you've got any questions, you can email us, propertymatters@barfoot.co.nz. Always love your questions or suggestions for future guests. Have a fabulous week, everybody. We'll catch you next Monday. Take care. Property Matters.